the mental game. When workloads spike and persist, managers typically seek external reinforcements, additional headcount to cover the work. Their logic is, our team has more work, therefore we need more workers. Though new recruits can provide relief, additional headcount also increases the managerial burden. There are more people needing direction, more issues to resolve, more one-on-one meetings, higher coordination costs, and often more drama. Impact players aren't like the reinforcements dispatched from recruiting. They work as structural reinforcements, much like crossbeams and rebar-reinforced concrete columns fortify structures to withstand greater loads. While other colleagues add to the load, they make work light. The way they approach work enables an entire team to carry a heavy load. Impact players interpret unrelenting demands as an opportunity to support and help others. Their orientation to help begins with a sense of belonging, a notion that they are not only on the team, they are wanted in the group, their unique strengths are recognized, and their work is needed and valued. They hold the fundamental belief that I am an important part of the team. They assume that they are valued members of the community, as are their colleagues. Lionel Lemoine, Director of Solutions Consulting for Adobe's Western EMEA region, builds community and creates a sense of belonging, not just on his team, but across the entire office. Lionel's manager, Chris Taplin, said, Lionel is easy to approach. He creates great energy in the office. The people around him can feel that he cares about what they care about. Lionel is known to keep a bowl of chocolates on his desk, the workplace equivalent of a welcome mat. Lionel, who is French and works in Paris, admits, I love chocolate. I always keep 10 different flavors. This is fine chocolate, the really good stuff. People stop by Lionel's desk for coffee, chocolates, and discussion. It's light. It's friendly. The bowl of chocolates says, come in, sit down, talk to me. You are welcome here. Contrast this with an accounting professional at a major event company who also had a bowl of chocolates prominently displayed on her desk. She didn't keep it light and friendly like Lionel did. Rather, once she ensnared her colleagues with chocolates, she sucked them into self-indulgent ranting. Her colleagues soon learned that this display of generosity was a trap. The chocolates were her web, and the visitor, her prey. The message was more like, right now, I own you. Instead of building community, she was building her own involuntary support system. When people feel that they belong in a community, they become more active and operate with a heightened sense of obligation to the community. This is what the researcher and advocate Ash Buchanan refers to as a benefit mindset, an extension of a growth mindset in which we not only seek to grow and fulfill our potential, but do it in a way that serves the well-being of all. Buchanan wrote, in a benefit mindset, we understand we are not separate individuals going it alone. We are interdependent beings who belong to a massive global ecosystem. The belief is, I can improve well-being for all. This belief is at the core of how Lionel Lemoine leads and collaborates. Lionel said, I work from a mindset that I am useful and I can have an impact. He explained the rationale for his approach. I feel more impact when I help others succeed, when I help people address issues or move a project. There's more than just altruism at work here. Lionel acknowledges, if my boss is successful, it also makes my life easier in the company. His manager feels that support, but also knows that Lionel is looking after the needs of all his stakeholders, his boss, his staff, and his internal clients, and remarked, I know he will do what is right for Adobe. In fact, Lionel signs off his emails with, for Adobe. These two orientations, a sense of belonging and a desire to benefit the larger community, form a belief that my efforts can make work better for everyone on my team. With this outlook, a challenging workload is not our burden to bear alone. We are neither a spectator of nor a contributor to others' struggles. We can draw on our strengths to lighten the workload and make work easier for all. The high-impact habits. When work is challenging, particularly in times of change, uncertainty, and crisis, team members who are easy to work with are at a premium, and those who make work easier for all are indispensable. What did managers tell us that they appreciated most? When people help their teammates came in at the number 3 spot on the list. This behavior is not only endearing, it's a necessity, much like it is for parents of a large brood of children. They can't possibly help all their children at once. They need the older children to help the young ones. Further, managers want to work alongside people who are easy, easy to get along with, easy to understand, easy to engage, and people who are cooperative, moving forward with ease. Wouldn't you? If you had your druthers and could choose from a talent pool of equally smart, capable people, wouldn't you pick the easy one? Conversely, team members who create confusion, disruption, or drama are an unwelcome tax on the manager and a liability to the team. In essence, managers want their staff members to help them get the team's work done and not create additional work, to lift their burden, not add to it. Here are some ways to increase, or simply not decrease, your credibility as you deal with a heavy workload. Credibility killers. Continually asking about your next promotion or raise. Sending long, meandering emails. Bad-mouthing colleagues, creating drama and conflict. Asking to revisit decisions that have already been made. Leaving out inconvenient facts and the other side of the story. Showing up late to meetings, multitasking, and then interrupting others. Here are the credibility builders. Helping teammates. Bringing good energy, having fun, and making others laugh. Cooperating with leaders. Getting to the point and telling it straight. Doing your homework and coming prepared. See Appendix A in the enhancement for the full ranking. In the next section, we'll explore 3 ways impact players make work light, both for themselves and others. Habit 1, be low maintenance. Managers often describe typical contributors as highly capable, but time-consuming. This might be the person who exhausts their manager's time rather than extends it, or the person who makes a good point but requires a lot of words to do so. They are like a massive gas-guzzling Hummer automobile. It will get you there, but it consumes a lot of resources in the process. One such manager said of an employee, "He is knowledgeable and a good performer, but there is a lot of drama and baggage, and it isn't worth it." On the other hand, managers described high-impact contributors as high-performance and low-maintenance, like the ideal car that performs exceptionally, requiring little effort to achieve and maintain that performance. Our survey data indicated that impact players consistently demonstrate low-maintenance, low-drama behavior at rates 4.5 times higher than typical contributors and 21 times higher than under-contributors. These powerhouses can carry a huge workload, but they don't make work any harder than it has to be. As William James, the father of American psychology, wrote, "The art of being wise is the art of knowing what to overlook." Likewise, the secret lies not just in what these players do, but in what they don't do. They don't complicate matters, create friction, or over-communicate. They favor value creation over politicking. Like Carl Doza, they are agile and easy to work with. Much like a favorite car, they are dependable, efficient, and economical, getting a lot done, but requiring little oversight. Low friction. According to the managers we interviewed, impact players steer clear of noisy, taxing, and fruitless efforts like finger-pointing, complaining, showboating, and land-grabbing. They eschew politics and dramatics that foment conflict but don't produce results. Each of these is an unproductive activity, a friction point that slows progress or stymies collaboration. They can be counted on to virtually never engage in these, thus creating another type of performance guarantee, an efficiency factor. The impact player efficiency factor. An impact player can be counted on to almost never, one, get involved in internal politics, two, cause drama or contention with colleagues, three, waste time, four, complain, blame others, and hold on to negativity, five, show off, seek credit, or compete with teammates. The most vital, valuable contributors take a low-friction approach to work. They reduce resistance by streamlining work, reducing conflict, and eliminating the drag created when we become overly attached to our ideas. They may have strong opinions and take a stand, but their opinions are held loosely, which allows them to change direction more easily. It's as if they have a sign in their office that says, "Open for feedback, no matter how convinced I may sound." Consider several impact players profiled earlier in the book. Paul Forgey, the supply chain director at Target, profiled in Chapter 3, was described as Mr. No Drama. His vice president said, "Paul doesn't let rumors or politics get in the way of his work. You always know where you stand with Paul, but he's willing to learn and change directions." When Fiona Sue, the planning manager at Google's Media Lab in Chapter 4, and her boss, John Tuchtenhagen, were at odds regarding a new media strategy, Fiona wanted John to see that although she had a point of view, her heels were not dug in. She presented her ideas to him in draft form, using handmade flashcards rather than a slick digital presentation. She tore scrap paper into quarters and hand-wrote her ideas in simple form, using only keywords and basic visuals. They talked through each of the 10 rough-cut ideas with ease and created a plan they both supported. Zach Kaplan, Google's brand marketing manager from Chapter 5, didn't discourage his colleagues from critiquing and giving feedback on the ideas he presented. Even after difficult meetings, he celebrated the team's progress and thanked his colleagues for strengthening the ideas. This low-friction approach prevents impact players from becoming stuck and enables their leaders to move faster and more freely. As one Adobe manager said, "He makes my job easy, or really just frees me for dealing with the other people who don't do the same." Economy of words. These contributors deliver high performance, but they do so economically, getting high mileage from their efforts. They speak with purpose, not impulse, and practice frugality, using fewer words to say more, especially in team settings. They may have a lot to say, yet they don't always say it. Rather, they contribute intentionally, remaining aware of when it's time to play big and when it's time to play small. They don't throw all their ideas out at once, but instead dispense their thoughts in small but intense doses, targeting the issues on which they can have the most significant impact. Monica Padman, the co-host of the Armchair Expert podcast profiled in Chapter 1, admitted that she had to grapple with the tension between weighing in and holding back during interviews. When talking to interesting people, it's natural to want to weigh in and score intellectually. Still, she's learned to check her intent and ask herself, "Am I saying something because it's necessary or because I simply want my voice heard?" Padman reflected, "You do not have to say everything that comes in your head. I think we all feel like we have to tell everybody exactly what we're thinking at all times. No, I can think it, and it can be an interesting thought, and it's okay that they're not going to hear it." Creating maximum impact requires knowing when to come in and when not to, as Padman noted. Is your voice being fully heard, and does it have weight? Are you making yourself easy to understand? If you want to increase your influence, use fewer words and limit the number of times you contribute in a given meeting. Focus your contribution where your ideas and your comments are relevant, unique, and evidence-based. To be sure your point lands, be succinct. Using the Play Your Chips Wisely Smart Play in the enhancement will help you economize your contribution and provide dual benefit. You will create more space for others to contribute, and your words become that much more influential. Impact Player Pro Tip. If you want your words to have more weight, 1, say it once, but say it clearly. 2, present an opposing view to add credibility. And 3, add a short preface to let people know an important idea is coming. You might want to say, "I have an insight that I'd like to offer," and then offer your insight. Always ready. If you've ever owned an unreliable car, you know how stressful it is when it doesn't start. You felt the constant weight of hoping it will work when you need it. In stark contrast, if you've driven a dependable car, you've experienced the peace of mind of knowing with surety that it will start. Being ready to go when needed is a crucial feature of a low-maintenance car. The same holds true in our professional work. Always being ready to step up or step in increases the value of our contribution. Impact players maintain a work-ready posture. They show up to meetings prepared to be called on and ready to contribute. If we want to have a voice in matters, we need to be prepared to contribute extemporaneously, to present a plan, report on a situation, weigh in on a critical decision, or step in for an absent colleague, all without forewarning. When we are seen as reliable and ready, we become impactful in moments that matter. American football player Jack Hacksaw Reynolds, known for his intensity, epitomized this readiness. The rest of the team would meet for breakfast on game days, wearing t-shirts and sweatpants, then later suit up in the locker room. Not Hacksaw. He arrived at breakfast in full uniform, pads on, helmet on, eye black on, hands taped. While speaking at the Bill Campbell Trophy Summit, his former San Francisco 49ers teammate, Ronnie Lott, recalled, he was saying to us, "Hey man, I'm ready to play right now. Let's play the game." The most valuable players can be put in at a moment's notice. If you want to get in the game, be game ready. Habit 2, lighten the load. Andy, a finance manager for a tech company, was asked by his manager to analyze the division's spending patterns. He crunched the numbers and emailed his manager the spreadsheet with the message, "Please see attached workbook," then checked the task off his list. Yet his manager felt as though Andy had just added to his to-do list. The manager said, "Well, now he gave me homework. He gave me the numbers, but did no qualitative analysis." Contrast this with Hillary Kaplan Samorjai, an astute, talented professional I was fortunate to work with at Oracle Corporation. As the global head of human resource development, I had a demanding executive job that came with an abundance of side projects for the company's management committee. I had my hands full at work and at home with 2 young children and another on the way. I had to make trade-offs to make it all work. I had always been an avid reader of management journals, but there was no longer enough time in my days. I stopped reading almost anything other than email messages and children's bedtime stories. However, I knew I needed to stay abreast of best practices and new ideas to be effective in my job. Hillary had her own workload, but she understood my challenge. She stopped by my office one day, brought up my predicament, and then asked, "Would it be helpful if I read for you?" She told me she would read Harvard Business Review and the Wall Street Journal each day and then send me a summary of the relevant articles. This had nothing to do with her job. It was an extraordinary offer, far outside any of her formal responsibilities, and presented in an unassuming manner. I gratefully accepted. That occurred well over 20 years ago, but I can still feel the relief. the financial analyst had added to his manager's burden, whereas Hillary, she helped me carry mine. Impact players not only do their job well, they help their colleagues do their jobs well too, which decreases the manager's worry load. And when they lighten the load for their bosses and colleagues, they benefit as well. Lend a hand. Consider the career of Karen Kaplan, who thought she was taking an easy job, but by making work easier for others, she earned her way to the top of the company. When Karen applied for a job at the advertising agency Hill Holliday in 1982, she was looking for a light, low-impact job that would give her time to study for the LSAT and get into law school. The receptionist job she was offered would be perfect. But when the founder extended the job offer, he said, "Congratulations, Karen, you are now the face and voice of Hill Holliday." She remembered, "I was stunned. He seemed to think this job was significant, so I figured I would take this role seriously and work wholeheartedly." At the front desk, Karen didn't have a boss per se, so she decided to become the CEO of reception, ensuring the entire front office ran smoothly. For example, when airline tickets from the travel agency arrived via courier, instead of just phoning people and letting them know to pick up their tickets, she delivered them. Then she offered to book the travel arrangements. Soon Karen was given bigger jobs and working for overwhelmed people carrying heavy client loads. She offered to take some of their workload and most gladly accepted. One boss tended to nap during client meetings, so she agreed to lead the sessions for him. Soon she was running major pieces of the business and then entire operations. Within 20 years, she was the president, and in 2013, she was appointed chairman and CEO of Hill Holliday. In reflecting, she said, "My favorite bosses were really smart, but a little bit lazy. They let me take work off their plate, but when I needed help, they could give me great guidance." By helping to shoulder the burden of leadership, she developed the mind and character of a senior executive, readying herself for advancement, and became a trusted choice to lead the company. Offer their genius. John Merca, a young content creator working in the United Arab Emirates, who goes by J.Ruse, had worked for the Dubai-based training and consultancy firm Biz Group, led by CEO Hazel Jackson. Like the best leaders, Hazel had made a practice of discovering her team members' native genius, a term I use for what people are naturally and astonishingly brilliant at. Native genius is what people do easily, without much conscious effort, and freely, without needing to be paid, rewarded, or even asked. When her team had met to discuss how to best utilize each person's native genius in the company, they gave J.Ruse the moniker "Creative Comic" for the jovial, imaginative energy he brought to his work in their media department. Years later, when J.Ruse started his own video production company, with his former employer Biz Group as his favorite client, he named the company after his native genius. When I met J.Ruse, he was wearing a black and turquoise polo shirt with his company name, Creative Comic, embroidered above the left breast. When I asked about it, he beamed. "This is my native genius." It was his way of advertising to the world, "This is who I am and what I do. I'm creative. I'm fun. I'm funny. Don't just hire me. Let me put my creativity to work for you." He made it easy for others to see and use his genius. How can you make it easy for your boss and your colleagues to tap into your best work and use your talent at its fullest? You certainly don't need to embroider your native genius on a shirt or use it as your company's name. But you might need to give your colleagues some guidance and simple instruction. Think of this as a user's guide to you. Like a good product manual that tells users what the product is designed to do and how to use it, a user's guide to you will let people know what you do well, your native genius, and how to utilize you at your best. When we work within our native genius, we get the job done easily and brilliantly, which means we create the largest impact with the least amount of effort, and work becomes lighter for all. Additionally, when we lend a hand and offer our genius, our reputation grows along with our influence. How can you offer your genius so others can easily utilize your best self? Habit 3, lighten the atmosphere. People enjoy working around impact players because they offer help and are easy to work with. While some players create a heavy, humid environment, they provide a light breeze. They help other people do their best work and create a sunny atmosphere, which helps eliminate the phantom workload. Though myriad factors contribute to a positive work environment, here are 3 of the ways impact players improve the environment and make work easier and more pleasant for all. Bring levity. If the workplace were a theater, impact players would be all comedy, no drama. In tense situations, they bring much-needed levity, making hard work fun and lighthearted, and eschewing the political game playing that sucks the life out of our work lives. Some are real comedians who get everyone laughing, like the witty colleague down the hall who drops a little wisecrack to break the tension, but most just possess a good sense of humor. Numerous managers from science to sales functions describe their high-value contributors as fun, funny, laughs at himself, makes me laugh, makes us all laugh. These good-humored colleagues laugh their way through difficulties, ward off despair, and unite people through humor. One manager told us, he is outcome-focused and delivers, but he's also so funny, so self-deprecating and endearing. People feel really valued when they work with him. In their book, Humor, Seriously, Stanford University professors Jennifer Aker and Naomi Bagdonis made the case that humor is one of the most powerful tools we have for accomplishing serious work. They asserted that humor makes us appear more competent and confident, strengthens relationships, unlocks creativity, and boosts our resilience during difficult times. In both their research and my own, we found that top executives appreciate working with people with a sense of humor. This might just be because there's a lot of days when it sucks to be boss. Our study showed that having fun and making us laugh was number 8 of the list of things managers most appreciate. While Aker and Bagdonis found that 98% of top executives prefer working with employees with a sense of humor, and 84% believe they do better work. And just in case you aren't convinced that it pays to have a sense of humor, in his book, The Levity Effect, the management consultant Adrian Gostick drew upon multiple workplace studies to conclude that humor strengthens relationships, reduces stress, and increases empathy, and that those who work in a fun environment have greater productivity and interpersonal effectiveness and lower absenteeism. While some of these stellar contributors lighten the environment with their humor, others turn challenging times into elevating experiences, more like the fun of climbing a tall mountain together than the fun of being at the beach together. Others may be more like Mary Poppins, who proclaimed, "In every job that must be done, there is an element of fun." They create a sense of buoyancy by turning quotidian work into games and making chores more bearable. For example, when Hannah Datz took over as the pre-sales leader at SAP North America, she inherited a disjointed group of roughly 100 individuals from various acquisitions. They were a collection of unconnected people with very different backgrounds, and morale was low. Hannah knew she needed to make real changes to the team's culture and fast. She mixed the acquired groups, split them into new teams, and gave each team a project. Develop a creative storyline for one of their product solutions. Each team's output would be relevant and useful for the entire group, but Hannah also introduced an element of fun that her group embraced wholeheartedly. Each team had to present it to the group in a competition format. Sarah Jones, SAP's global vice president and Hannah's boss, said, "I've never seen so much come from an intra-company project. They now have 11 research projects completed, and when I see these people in the office, there is team spirit and camaraderie." employee attrition is typically high after an acquisition, often as high as 40%. Under Hannah's fun and productive leadership, the group retained 98 of the 100 acquired employees. Recognize others. In their book, Leading with Gratitude, Adrian Gostick and Chester Elton asserted that performance improves when leaders express gratitude for their team members. But the benefits of gratitude work both ways. Gratitude reduces anxiety and depression, strengthens the immune system, lowers blood pressure, and creates high levels of happiness. Focusing on exercising and expressing gratitude can mitigate the negative effects of stress in and out of the workplace. What's more, gratitude is contagious. When we express gratitude in the workplace, we can create a ripple effect that drives the organizational culture toward positivity. With the impact player mindset, we celebrate our colleagues' successes as much as our own. We shine a spotlight on outstanding work and let people know their work is appreciated. Zach Kaplan, the brand marketing manager at Google mentioned previously, not only does stellar work, he recognizes when his teammates do likewise. His former manager, Tyler Ball, explained that Zach is constantly appreciating the work others are doing and is fond of giving his colleagues digital high fives, a formal recognition program Tyler's team used. Tyler said, "For the last 6 years, I have kept track of the high fives awarded by people on my team. Zach has sent 69 high fives in the space of 6 months." Putting that into context, Tyler pointed out, "Zach has sent more in 6 months than others have sent in 6 years. I know people who took 6 months just to send thank you notes for their own wedding." Practice snowballs for Zach. People love working with him. When asked, Zach said, "I like getting them, so I figure other people would too," and then shared a notion he learned watching his mother, Karen Kaplan, grow from CEO of the reception desk to CEO of Hill Holiday. She taught him, "Your candle loses nothing when it lights another." Be human. The managers we interviewed indicated that their top contributors promoted well-being and safety for others at much higher rates than their peers, with impact players doing this an average of 2.3 times more than typical contributors. The stories told by managers didn't paint a portrait of a busybody, an alarmist, or a do-gooder. The impact players promoted well-being by imbuing a sense of humanity into the workplace, treating people as whole people, and recognizing that each of their colleagues carries stress as well as joy far beyond their responsibilities at work. Sue Warnke is the Senior Director of Content Experience at Salesforce. Sue is one of those vibrant people who can shoulder multiple responsibilities with success and have energy to spare. She's a strong leader and a meaningful contributor and still goes beyond, working to make Salesforce a more inclusive place. She's also the mother of three adolescent children, the youngest of whom struggled with a perplexing mental condition. When his condition escalated in early 2020, Sue took a leave of absence so both she and her husband, who was already caring for the family at home, could focus fully on their son during that challenging time. Before she left, she shared her story on the company's internal website. It was a heartfelt message in which she shared her family's struggles in the hopes that others experiencing similar situations wouldn't feel alone. More than 13,000 of her fellow employees read, shared, and commented on her post. It was an expression of humanity that resonated around the world. A month later, when her son's condition improved, Sue returned to work. She was sitting in a meeting when two employees walked in, holding a rod the length of a broomstick from which hung hundreds of origami cranes. The cranes were strung together in columns, forming what Sue described as a breathtaking curtain of color. Before she understood what was happening, more people walked in with a second curtain of cranes and an enormous box of more unstrung cranes. Why paper cranes? And why so many? One of the 13,000 employees who had seen Sue's blog post was a woman named Lynn Levy. While Sue was away caring for her son, Lynn decided to string cranes for Sue's son. It's an ancient Japanese tradition called Senbazuru, which means 1,000 cranes, and symbolizes peace and healing for someone in pain. Lynn's idea sparked a mini movement at Salesforce. Teams began meeting to fold cranes during lunch breaks and team meetings. They talked and laughed and connected as they folded. Lynn tracked it all with charts and encouragement, hoping she could get to 1,000 cranes before Sue returned in March. Employees began mailing her cranes from all over the world: Munich, New York City, London, Denver, Dallas, Surrey, Singapore, and New Jersey. At one point, Lynn made trips to the mailroom 3 or 4 times a day. Soon there were not just 1,000 cranes, but 2,000 cranes, and then 3,000. Employees in San Francisco gathered to string them together. The final number was 3,122 cranes from hundreds of participants. The crane is an apropos symbol of support because of its double meanings. The bird's wings create lift for flight, while a construction crane lifts the heaviest of loads. Sue described the impact of this gesture. She said, "I looked at the sea of color yesterday evening and I imagined the many hands who folded them. A human being taking a moment out of their day to love another human being that they may not even know. And I heard their voice as a community, folding, talking, sharing, and laughing together." Many said that the folding parties were some of the best moments they've had at Salesforce. "I see these cranes of every color and made by employees of every background as a representation of deep beauty and compassion and diversity." When we consider our colleagues as humans, not resources, we form connections that enable others to carry their burdens with greater ease. We also create community and build the collective strength to endure hardship and withstand crisis. John Mooallem paraphrased the work of 2 sociologists who studied the human effects of natural disasters. "In ordinary life, we suffer alone. Any struggle, any pain winds up isolating us from other people, or even making us resentful of everybody else who seem to somehow have it easier. But in a disaster, an entire community suffers together. Trauma and even death, the stuff that we suppress in daily life, spills out as a public phenomenon for everyone to see. And all those who share in the experience are brought together in a very powerful psychological sense." Mooallem concluded that the best force for counteracting chaos is connection. Speak up. Though impact players make work lighter for others, including their leaders, and create a positive work environment, that doesn't mean that they steer clear of heavy topics. They use their influence to raise difficult topics and to speak up for colleagues who may lack a voice in the organization. But they do more than cry foul. They bring leadership and facilitation to otherwise difficult issues. That was the case when Leila Seca, a senior vice president at Salesforce who had worked for the company for more than 10 years, became concerned that women in the company were being paid less than their male counterparts and felt an obligation to do something about it. She teamed up with Cindy Robbins, the Executive Vice President of Human Resources. Together, they met with Mark Benioff, the company's founder and CEO. As they shared their concerns, Benioff was initially skeptical. Something so contrary to the company's values would be hard for any leader to acknowledge. Eventually, he agreed to an audit of the company's then 17,000 employees. The audit uncovered disparities, and as a result, the company spent $3 million to award salary increases to 6% of the company, including both women and men. Seca and Robbins raised a difficult topic, one that certainly didn't make their CEO's life easier. However, by speaking up, they made it easier for him to see the disparity and to ensure the company was living its values. we too may need to use our influence to make it easier to have difficult but important conversations, especially those that enable everyone to contribute at their fullest and to be valued for their contribution. The decoys and distractions. Professionals who operate with a contributor mindset aren't necessarily difficult employees. They may not be drama queens, problem children, or taxing people. They simply consume management attention, adding to the burden their leaders and colleagues already feel. However, when we assume that greater demands pose a threat to our well-being and conclude that I need help from my leader, we are seen as dependents, not leaders. The FaceTime decoy. It's easy to assume that getting more FaceTime with your leaders is a good way to get ahead. It's like a scene out of Mad Men, the TV series that chronicles the work lives of the advertising executives of the 1960s on New York City's Madison Avenue. In this world, you curry favor with the boss or the client by stopping by their office regularly, engaging in small talk, or going for drinks after work. The assumption is that relationship trumps outcomes, and spending time with your boss signifies your importance and assures success. However, the data shows that managers spend a disproportionate amount of their time with low performers, 26% of their time according to one study. As you might guess, they resent it. As one NASA manager described an old-school schmoozing mission manager, he chats with you, assuming you want to talk with him about these tangents. He figures that if the relationship is strong, you'll overlook the problems. The manager admitted that whenever he saw the man's name on his meeting calendar, he tried to get out of the meeting. And he's not the only one. SpaceX staffers called to complain that the mission manager was wasting their time and threatening the mission. And the manager was forced to do damage control. Instead of seeking more FaceTime, strive to be low maintenance but visible. Use the FaceTime you do have to find out what's important right now. The WIN, the win. Negotiate what you need to finish strong and get guidance to assure you hit the target. The play big decoy. We can reduce our influence by playing too big. When we speak too often or are too verbose, people stop listening. We become like white noise. Our voice fades away, relegated to background chatter. We're particularly vulnerable to over-contributing when the stakes are high and when we're passionate about a topic. We may think people are still listening, most still nod their head politely, but we've been tuned out, much like a dog that barks at everything and everyone. The secret to being heard is contributing intentionally and knowing when to play big and when to play small. If you want to maximize your impact, dispense your opinions in small but intense doses. See the smart play in the enhancement. Here are a list of some failed plays, four common ways to misplay your chips and reduce your voice and credibility. 1. The ditto, piling onto someone else's comments with empty agreement. 2. The by the way, veering from topic with the seemingly irresistible tangent. 3. The double down, repeating your point for emphasis. 4. The monologue, trying to figure out what your point is by talking it out in a rambling monologue. The full disclosure decoy. Most professionals appreciate that the workplace has become more casual, not just a relaxed dress code, but an environment where we don't have to leave our authentic self at the door. However, we all know someone who has taken casual Friday a little too far and shared way too much. Instead of being a whole person and acknowledging the other facets of an interest in everyone's life, they spew their whole life onto their colleagues. One manager described someone who shared too much. We all heard about his joint custody woes and how poorly his ex-wife was raising the kids. It was like he dumped all of the glasses of his life into one. the glass overflowed and made others on the team uncomfortable. You may not need to be buttoned up at work, but don't show up to the team-building rafting trip in a Speedo. Creating a personable workspace doesn't require full disclosure. We can recognize that people have full lives outside work without sharing or asking about all the details. See the safety tip, prevent overexposure, in the enhancement. The cheering section decoy. Several years ago, a colleague and I collaborated to organize a global leadership forum in Asia. It was a bold, challenging endeavor. As we achieved each milestone, my partner praised my efforts and expressed his sincere delight in each success. Initially, it was affirming, but it became wearisome when I realized I was doing the heavy lifting while he was just cheering me on. I shared my concern. He agreed, actually, and then elaborated, "But what I bring is hope and belief that we can do this, and belief in you." Ah, that explained things. I told my lovely colleague that while I appreciated his support, I already had plenty of self-confidence. What we most needed was for him to pull more weight himself. To his credit, he did, and then we both cheered as we delivered a successful program. It's admirable to cheer for our colleagues while they do difficult work, but it's far less inspiring when they need us out on the field. And when someone's being mistreated or there's a breach of ethics, it's time for speaking up, not cheering up. Don't be a cheerleader when your coworkers really need a teammate or an advocate. Multiplying your impact. In tough times, when we cast ourselves as dependents rather than reinforcements, we not only cause strain and frustration for our leaders, we nudge them down the path of diminishing others. Our requests for assistance encourage them to operate in know-it-all mode and pull them into micromanagement, the number one characteristic of leaders I refer to as diminishers. When taken to an extreme, this dependence mentality turns to entitlement, the assumption that other people owe me the help and resources I need. This is draining for managers and has a corrosive effect on team culture, destroying cohesion and collaboration as entitled employees suck energy and resources away but fail to contribute to the broader community. As others pull away from the takers, factions are formed, politics proliferate, and toxicity creeps into the culture. In contrast, consider the value proposition created by impact players. By being easy to work with, they do great work faster and without fuss, which means that everyone gets a time rebate. And as they use their strength to help the struggling players on the team, they free their managers up to lead rather than micromanage. The individual gets seen as a deputy to their leaders and stakeholders, which means they gain valuable leadership experience and influence. So when they advance to more senior and more challenging leadership roles, they're ready for them, and others want to work for them. Furthermore, by creating a positive environment in which people feel included and want to belong, they help shape the organization's culture, reinforcing the values of collaboration and inclusion, and reducing the toxic effects of burnout. As a byproduct, they build a reputation as low-maintenance, high-performance players people want to work with. They are picked first for important jobs and included in the most critical initiatives. American football is a grueling sport. Players face off against opponents determined to not only stop their progress, but also literally tear them down. Perhaps no player shoulders more pressure than the quarterback, who must read the field, locate open players, and make split-second decisions while massive opposing linemen charge directly at him. A quarterback might not expect that one of those opponents would be the one to lighten his load. Yet, that was precisely what happened to Steve Young. Young was a Hall of Fame quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers and two-time NFL MVP. His opponent, Reggie White, was a fearsome defensive end and the NFL's all-time leader in sacks. 198 quarterback takedowns by the time he retired in the year 2000. He was strong, fast, and big, 6 feet, 5 inches, 300 pounds big. White was loud, too, like growling and screaming as he advanced on the field. Young said, "Reggie just threw people out of his way. I'd drop back to pass, and I could hear Reggie coming for me." Young explained what made Reggie White such an amazing player. In the middle of all of that intensity, adrenaline, and competitiveness, that insanity, Reggie was mindful of Steve's well-being. Young said, "He was exploding with everything he had, trying to get his job done. Then all of a sudden, he would grab me and then roll around and make sure that I fell on top of him." Yes, he did his job. However, he also did what he could to prevent injury to Steve. Young continued, "And then he would want to talk. 'Hey, Steve, how you doing?' Steve would reply, 'Well, Reggie, right now, not so good.' Or Reggie would ask, 'Hey, how's your dad?'" Work can be intense, but it can still be light. If that giant of an athlete could make a heavy hit more bearable for an opponent, it's surely possible within a team of coworkers. Impact players, be they on the sports pitch or at work, make heavy work lighter. As work creeps in scope and permeates every facet of our lives, there's no room for a shadow workload. But there is every reason to make work easier, smoother, less injurious, and more joyful. We may not be able to reduce our caseload, but with the right mindset, we can lighten the phantom workload for all. And as we make challenges more bearable for others, we might just find that our work experience improves and our load lightens as well. The playbook. This playbook, which is also available in the enhancement PDF file, contains tips for aspiring leaders to exercise and strengthen the assumptions and habits necessary to make work light. Smart plays. Smart play number one, get to the point. People who are easy to work with are usually easy to understand. They get to the point and express their ideas clearly. If you want to sharpen your point, try any of these techniques. Write your point as if it were a 140-character tweet. Add an executive summary to your written reports or oral briefings. This could be a paragraph with the key points or just a single sentence with a conclusion. When delivering your report, start with the executive summary and then add detail as needed. When forwarding a long email chain to a leader or any other colleague, provide a summary of the idea exchange included in the email chain, and then add your question or request. Score a three-pointer by summarizing your thoughts or a larger conversation in three clear points. Smart play number two, play your chips wisely. Before an important meeting, give yourself a budget of poker chips, where each chip represents a comment or contribution to the meeting and is worth a specific number of seconds of talk time. Use your chips sparingly. Weigh in where you have an insight that is relevant. Is this issue immediately relevant to your boss or stakeholders? If it isn't on the specific agenda for the meeting, is it something that's on their broader agenda? For example, one of their top three priorities. Evidence-based. Is the insight based on data or other evidence? Are you presenting a balanced point of view with data that also tells the other side of the story? Unique. Is your point additive to what has already been said, or is it just restating a point that has already been made? Do the ideas or insights reflect your unique role, perspective, or skills? Succinct. Is your point clear and concise? Some people may need to play their chips more sparingly, while others may need to dispense their ideas more liberally. Either way, a chip, whether a physical chip in your pocket or an image held in your mind, serves as a talisman, reminding you to contribute intentionally and valuably. Smart play number three, discover your native genius. if you aren't clear about what your native genius is, you can get a rapid 360-degree perspective by sending an email or text to 6 friends or colleagues. Make it easy for them to respond by using this simple template. Hi, I would appreciate your input. I'm trying to better understand how I can use my native genius at work, meaning what I do naturally, easily, and freely. From your perspective, what do you see as my natural genius? If you need a prompt, here are a few questions to get you thinking. What do I do better than anything else I do? What do I do without effort? What do I do without being asked? What do I tend to do better than people around me? Thank you. Your input would help me understand how to contribute at my fullest. Use that little template to help find your native genius. Smart play number 4. Create a user's guide to you. If you feel as though you are being used like a hammer when you're actually a Swiss Army knife, you might need to let your team know how to best use you. Create a user's guide to you that includes 1. Your native genius. What does your mind do easily and freely? 2. Appropriate uses. What are various ways your native genius could be applied at work? 3. Instructions and care. What type of information, feedback, and support do you need from others to do your best work? 4. Warnings. Where do you tend to get stuck or derailed, and how can people help you stay on track? Safety tips. Safety tip number 1, communicate your native genius. When communicating your native genius, remember to clarify your intent. Explain what is meant by native genius. It's people's natural brilliance or gift, what they do easily and freely and extremely well. Let people know that you really enjoy and excel at work that draws on your native genius and that you're eager to use it to contribute in more significant ways. Don't be a prima donna. Don't demand to work only within your native genius. Just because you have identified your native genius doesn't mean that you shouldn't have to work in areas that you aren't naturally good at or particularly interested in. Give it time. When asking someone to consider additional ways to utilize your native genius, give them time to think. Try to break up the conversation into several steps. 1. Share your intent. 2. Discuss your native genius. And step 3, discuss new applications for your talents. Make it a two-way street. In addition to discussing your native genius, take the opportunity to recognize and be interested in the native genius of others on your team, including your boss. Safety tip number 2, prevent overexposure. Most everybody wants to be treated as a whole person, not just an employee. However, everyone has a different comfort level with mingling work and personal life. If you are someone who is comfortable talking about your personal life, use these safety measures. 1. Share only what you would be willing to share publicly. 2. Share but never inquire. This allows others to reciprocate voluntarily. 3. Continue only if your sharing is appreciated and reciprocated. If a colleague doesn't reciprocate, it might be a sign of an unwelcomed gift. Safety tip number 3, ensure your help is helpful. You don't want to be the party guest who arrives early and offers to help with last-minute preparations, but requires so much instruction, attention, and validation that you become an encumbrance or nuisance. Try these 3 tips to ensure your offers to help are a blessing, not a burden. 1. Instead of asking, "What can I do to help?" ask, "Would it be helpful if I did this thing for you?" 2. Instead of asking, "How do you want me to do it?" ask, "Are there any specific requirements that I should know about, or should I just use my judgment?" 3. Let the person know what you did and to tell you if they want you to do it differently. Coaching tips for managers. You can find coaching practices to help your team members make work light in the Coach's Playbook at the end of Chapter 8 and included in the enhancement PDF file. Chapter 6 Summary, Make Work Light. This chapter describes how impact players deal with unrelenting demands and how they create a positive and productive work environment for everyone on the team. When we work with a contributor mindset, our practice is to add to the burden. Our assumption is that I need help from my leader. It's a dependence mindset. Our habits are to require attention, to seek help, and to contribute to the stress. The implication of this is that when we work with a contributor mindset, we increase the burden of already overtaxed leaders and teams, especially during difficult times. In contrast, when we work with an impact player mindset, our practice is to make work light. Our assumptions are that my efforts make work better for everyone on the team. It's a contribution mindset, that we are an important part of a team, a mindset of belonging, and that we can improve the well-being for all, a benefit mindset. Our habits are to be low maintenance, to lighten the load, and to lighten the atmosphere. When we work with an impact player mindset, we develop a reputation as high-performing, no-nonsense players that everyone wants to work with. This reinforces a culture of collaboration and inclusion. In dealing with unrelenting demands and burdens, the decoys to avoid are 1, FaceTime, 2, play big, 3, full disclosure, and 4, cheering section.